Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This week's episode of Nightmare on Film Street is brought to you by the horror short film Vody from Little Baker Films. From the muck and the mire of the swamps of 1980s Hollywood rises a new kind of cartoon pal. Celebrated artist Al Yacko returns to his family's abandoned storybook home in Los Angeles to claim what his father and grandfather could never achieve: eternal fame. But Al gets more than he bargained for when he discovers an old drawing in the attic that takes on a life of its own. Vody. Can his trusty animated confidant Bugsy pull Al out of the sinking bog that Vody has sunk him into? Or will Al sell his soul for the chance at seeing his name on the big screen? Vody is Dario Argento meets Walt Disney by Lil Baker Films. Now, if I could just like put a pause in this ad for a half a second, I'm real sorry to do this, but Dario Argento meets Walt Disney is the mashup I didn't know I needed, and I want it put directly into my veins. Vody is an indie horror short film about a cartoonist who returns to his family home in Hollywood to find strange visions and family curses. It's one of a whole slew of projects from Little Baker Films, and you can follow their progress online at littlebakerfilms.com or on Twitter and Instagram at Little Baker Films. That's LilBaker Films.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street, the horror movie podcast for the casually obsessed. I'm John, and I'll be joined by Kim very shortly. We are here for another Nightmare Alley episode, the spooky side street podcast in the regular Nightmare on Film Street feed. We are talking with four of the directors of the new found footage horror anthology, VHS 94. We're talking with Jennifer Reeder, Chloe Okuno, Simon Barrett, and Ryan Prowse. We did record this over Zoom ahead of the world premiere of VHS 94 at Fantastic Fest. The Fantastic Fest PR team, the people handling the interview, had them set up in the karaoke rooms. If you've never been to the Alamo Drafthouse in Austin, Texas, they have a bar attached to the actual movie theater, and above that bar is a series of karaoke rooms, which is usually where the interviews are conducted. Unfortunately, the Wi-Fi connection was not incredible, and the acoustics of those rooms are not built for podcasting, so apologies up front for that. I think the technical issues are absolutely hysterical, though, because it really does feel in line with the found footage discussion that we're having throughout. There are a few moments where we have some delays. At some point, Jennifer Reeder and Chloe Okuno just disappear out of the Zoom chat completely, but we all roll with it. And, you know, overall, this is a really fun interview, and I've actually kept a lot of those technical problems in because they made me laugh a lot. So I hope you enjoy them as well. VHS 94 is the fourth movie in the VHS franchise. It's a series of anthology films. It's actually available on Shudder right now, so you can check it out. There are five segments, six if you want to get real technical about it, but like one of them's kind of a secret and it gets tagged onto the end of Chloe's, which is great. There's no need to worry if you haven't actually seen the anthology film yet. There are no spoilers. There's a little bit of discussion about just, you know, found footage in general, the steps that each of the filmmakers took to sort of recreate the shot on video aesthetic from 1994, and about how 1994 is kind of this pivotal year for amateur film. specifically in news broadcasts. It's a big thing that we talk about with Jennifer Reeder regarding her segment, which is actually a wraparound that follows a SWAT team. But, of course, if your watch list is as long as mine is, especially now in October, oh boy, are there a lot of horror movies to watch out there and just not nearly enough time. You know, don't worry. There's nothing that we talk about in here that's going to ruin the movie for you. And really, I would highly recommend that you check it out before Halloween. I think anthology films are perfect for your Halloween horror watch list. They're just bite-sized little pieces of weird shit. And VHS 94 is 100% that. Kim and I have both been big fans of this franchise since it first started, and we're super happy that we've got another installment to talk about here today. So I'm going to throw it off to the trailer, and we're going to jump right into our interview with filmmakers Jennifer Reeder, Chloe Acuno, Simon Barrett, and Ryan Prowse.
Police search warrant!
Police search warrant!
Anything.
Could be no one left alive in here.
Do I just press the button?
Press the red button.
Just press it.
I assume they're paying extra for this.
Yes.
This is a remarkable story.
Hello? Hello?
Holly?
The veggie masher turns your vegetables into a tasty, mouth-watering paste.
All are welcome.
Hello.
Hey there.
Hello.
Hi.
Sorry, I just dropped my microphone like as soon as we got in.
Are you guys in the karaoke rooms? Is that where they have you?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's fun.
It's chilly.
Perfect acoustics.
Yeah. Congratulations on the world premiere tonight. I'm sure you guys are excited about that.
Buzzing. I'm very excited. This is my first time at Fantastic Fest, and this is how you do it.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's such a fun vibe, and everybody's going to dig VHS. It's a great crowd for this movie.
Oh, for sure. They better. We've been, pumping the crowd, getting them ready.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I walk around people and I kind of say, like, hey, I've heard VHS 94 is really good. Who said that? Wow. I want to get a ticket. Wow.
Soothsayers.
And then, you know, and so I think we're going to sell. I think we're, you know, we're going to have a couple. We might fill half the theater.
Has anybody had a chance to have any good barbecue while they're in Texas?
Not yet.
I got queso. We immediately hit the queso joint. I got two tall boys of queso, threw them down in the in the alley back behind the theater, and now I'm ready to rip, just greasy.
I don't think I've eaten anything but draft house food since I got here. My body is dying.
That's funny. So we were gonna ask you to just do a quick little roundtable, just sort of, you know, say your name, introduce your segment, like a little TLDR, what it's about for everybody listening to this later on.
Sure.
Sure. Hey, I'm Jennifer Reeder. I wrote and directed the segment. It's called The Wraparound. And it is, you know, without spoiling anything, essentially about a SWAT team that invades what they think is a drug super lab, but they encounter something else super instead.
I'm Chloe Acuno. My segment was called Storm Drain, and it's about a reporter who with her cameraman is going to investigate a sort of local legend called the Rat Man. And she goes in thinking it's just a really stupid puff piece, but obviously it turns out to be a little more serious than that.
My segment follows Chloe's in the film. I'm Simon Barrett, and I directed a segment called The Empty Wake, which is about a young funeral home employee who's given the job of officiating an overnight memorial service, as well as filming it for the family of the deceased for the memorial video. And it's just what unfolds over the course of that evening.
And I'm Ryan Prowse, and I did a segment called Terror, and it's about a militia who get their hands on a supernatural entity that they plan to use as a weapon to fell the mighty U.S. federal government.
Awesome. Thanks so much. That's a great way to just put the face to, or the voice to the segment.
Yes.
Sure.
So we wanted to ask you, you know, initially, like, about the development process for your stories. Like, were these, like, individually, like, were these scripts that you had, you know, in your drawer, you were just waiting for somebody to ask you to shoot it? Or was this something that you wrote specifically for VHS 94?
Oh, well, so I actually sort of inherited part of the storyline. So David Bruckner was supposed to direct the wraparound, then he got called away to do Hellraiser. So I was actually brought on pretty late in the game, so to say. And so I inherited a concept that was perhaps begun both by Simon and David. And then I didn't want to change it too drastically, you know, because I knew that Chloe's segment had already been shot. Ryan's segment had already been shot. I think Simon's segment was in production when that happened. So there wasn't a lot of room to just like reinvent the entire wraparound. But I still feel like I was able to come in and inject myself into that story.
Cool.
Yeah, for me, you know, the story idea was like one of those, like, I assume this is probably the same way for Ryan and Chloe. It was like, you know, when I was invited to participate in the project, you know, you start kind of spinning your wheels about like what kind of horror story, you know, you've always wanted to tell that maybe works better in a shorter found footage format than in a feature format. And, you know, and in particular, I'd always wanted to tell, you know, kind of a corpse horror story. You know, I was influenced by a lot of other films, but wanted to do it in a different style. So for me, it was like trying to think of like, what's a good VHS segment. Yeah.
Corpse horror sounds like a very specific but very odd and cool subgenre. How about you, Chloe?
But you know what I mean, right? It's not zombie horror. Yeah. I think we're out of sync.
Oh, I think we have a little bit of a delay.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. Like, corpse horror, it's very specific, but always cool.
Got it. Got it. And then you asked Chloe a question, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Aren't the two of you like 5 feet apart, or the four of you 5 feet apart from each other?
They're in the next room.
they're in the next room, but for legal reasons, we have to do it this way.
For me, I came in and pitched, I think, a couple ideas to David Bruckner and to the other producers. And it was the sort of storm drain idea, that aspect of it, going into a storm drain, finding like a creature, was something that I've been playing around with a little bit as a feature idea. But I really like the idea of doing it in the sort of found footage format. So yeah, that's how it happened.
How weird were those other stories you pitched? Because like, I gotta say, like, storm drain is it's so much fun, but it goes to such places.
It does, yeah. Yeah, the other one I pitched was like, I had just come back from a bachelorette party, which was hilarious because like, I don't know why I'm telling this story, but like, there was like these like male strippers that kind of seemed to like terrorize all of us, not in like a really bad way, just in the way that we're like, oh my God, like a naked man in our living room, what's happening?
And then the horror maker in yourself, you're just like, I'm going to make a movie of this.
Yeah, contingency cut. They can hear them. We just can't hear them.
Oh, we can't hear them. I think they froze for us as well.
It looks like they've frozen, unfortunately. So, you know, with that in mind, Ryan, tell us a little bit about where your short came from, your segment.
So it's just going great. We couldn't hear that.
Oh, no.
Can you ask
oh,
it
no.
again?
Can, if
no,
you...
this is going good. This is going good. This is the way I'd want it to be.
This is great. This is the unofficial added segment.
It looks like one. Yeah, Jennifer, completely frozen.
That's that sucks.
Yeah. Well,
Oh,
and they're gone. Okay.
Oh no.
Chloe and Jennifer, come over here. why are we separated? We're lost in the draft house. It doesn't make
sense. We've unofficially walked into VHS 2024, I assume.
Yeah. It just got taken out. I've seen this movie before.
Ryan, where did the idea for your segment come from?
Definitely just sort of trying to think what scares the hell out of me. And it happens to be militia violence, which is on the rise in 2021, 2020, and also 94 as well. So it felt apt for today and yesteryear of horrific terror events. That mixed with, such a fun, the VHS series franchise is a fave of mine, and it was so fun to kind of think on what was going to be my approach to found footage in general, but then also my way into it was more of those 90s white power documentaries that were on HBO every other weekend you just watch nonstop, or about skinheads or whatever. So I thought that was a kind of a fun way to twist the found footage approach a little bit.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned thinking about 1994 and specifically, because we were curious if what you guys were doing to sort of establish it as a segment from 1994, either visually or in the story. I've got your answer a little bit, but visually, what were you pulling from to try and to make it look like it's 20, 30 years old?
Well, I think visually was kind of like the visual. The visual opportunities that it afforded us was, I think, kind of the original inspiration for setting it in 1994, which was really actually David Bruckner's idea, I should say. He kind of creatively put this together, and the 1994 of it all was his notion, because it would kind of force us to use such antiquated analog technologies. And I think if Jennifer and Chloe were still in this interview, it is to work with me. That Jennifer in particular really was looking at kind of what was going on in 1994, videos that were permeating the culture, and she was very she was really trying to go for a very specific aesthetic relating to those videos. For me, I was more just this is terrific, I get to really make this look like actual VHS, which has such a distorted look and kind of creates an additional layer of just creepiness and verisimilitude for the story I was telling. The downside is you lose a lot of detail. So my main, the lead actor in my film, the lead actress, Kyle Legend, I worry people kind of actually can't see her performance sometimes. We've got the whole group here.
Perfect.
Everyone's slide on.
No, yay! No,
hello again.
Hello again.
Hi. Brought the conversation to a crashing halt.
No, I was just saying that I felt like if you two were here, you'd be saying kind of how inspiring it was to work with me and kind of but anyway, whatever. you can answer the questions.
A living legend in your presence.
Yeah, I am. Chloe and Jennifer they probably would have said something like that, but anyway, they're here.
Yeah, so we were just kind of talking on the actual kind of visual tech of 94 and how you embodied that in each of your segments. If you two have anything you want to add in terms of how you were going for, the 90s VHS aesthetic visually.
Yeah, I don't know how much they talked about the actual technical side of it.
Not at all.
I was really into that when I heard that they were doing VHS 1994. That was, the main thing that attracted me to it was it's VHS, and I love the series and I love all the filmmakers who've been involved in it, but I really liked the idea of going back and doing a 90s period piece. So with ours, funnily enough, a lot of it, because it just sort of takes place in this storm drain, it isn't in some ways like very specific except for wardrobe. But yeah, we you know, we did a lot of camera tests for how to get the right look of it. We shot digitally, ended up doing a few different tape transfers to get the sort of authentic like VHS look, which I think is incredible. And my DP, Jared Rabb, did an amazing job.
I will say your news anchor hairstyling was very on point 90s.
That's very true, actually. Yeah, that the sort of like bob, the 90s shoulder
like blown bob. Out. Yeah, it was great.
And
yes.
And when you say tape transfers, are you saying that you're taking like what you shot digitally and transferring it to a VHS tape?
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, everyone had a different process. Each filmmaker had a different individual process to give them like a different look. So it wouldn't be too exhausting, but everyone did something crazy. While you were talking, I just realized I wish I could set every horror movie in 1994 because characters don't have cell phones.
Yes.
Yeah. that alone, like 9 out of 10 horror ideas I have, cell phones just like don't get me past the first scene. I'm like, oh yeah.
The cell phone is the slasher, the killer in the room.
Probably. And so, Jennifer, how about yours with your segment? Simon was actually telling us that you were really paying attention to like 1994 culture and in what you were looking to do.
Yeah. So the same thing. We shot, you know, with like an Arri Alexa, which is a really nice digital camera, and then we ran it through both Andrew Appel, who's the DP, who actually also shot Simon's section. We both really loved the tape transfer of Betamax, which like has a lot of artifacting in it, and then we added even a little bit more artifacting so it felt like especially kind of grimy and glitchy and crunchy. But because I knew that my section in terms of the kind of production design would feature a lot of monitors, then I was thinking a lot about 1994 and how many events we remember from 1994 that are preserved on video. So for instance, like OJ's Bronco chase, the Nancy Kerrigan knee whacking incident, Kurt Cobain died. There was the, you know, the David Koresh, you know, Waco fire. I mean, there was a lot of events that we knew about through amateur video. And so without, you know, infringing on copyright, there's little bits of some of that footage in my section.
Oh, wow.
That's so true, too, because growing up in the 90s as a kid, the home video recorder was such new home tech that I remember, like, there was a period where my dad was taking videos of, like, every single Christmas, birthday, Thanksgiving. Like, nothing would happen, but we would record it.
Yeah, and I think that now we're very used to watching. I mean, there's so many things so many news events that we know about based on amateur, you know, video. I mean, obviously now it's all cell phone, but, you know, I mean, not to get too deep, but kind of like prior to the Rodney Graham, you know, beating, or Rodney King beating, you know, there was like analog home video footage did not exist, you know, like on broadcast news, you know? So with that, with like that Rodney King incident, and then after that, we really, you know, that kind of analog video signal as like news footage, you know, became much more prominent. And I think that 1994 is a year where we know, we understand a lot of the most kind of pressing events of that year, just based on, you know, home video, amateur analog video.
Damn, that's a really good point. Suddenly this movie seems like way more believable too, because like we were all paying way too much attention to O.J. Simpson or Waco, Texas. We didn't even know about the fucking thing that happened in the funeral home that no one wants you to hear about. So we were actually we're really big fans of found footage as well, and like we just think it's a completely different medium for storytelling than any other subgenre. And we were maybe hoping we could get you to talk a little bit about like crafting a story with that sort of first person perspective and what it's like to make scares out of that.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm kind of the found footage expert at the table, having done the first two VHS movies and also Blair Witch, which is like certainly more than I ever fucking intended to.
The godfather of found footage? Can we call you that?
In a way, I think you could say that I'm the godfather of found footage. Yes. So, and people do. But you know what, like, I mean, so that, you know, obviously I've spent way too much time thinking about it, but, you know, I mean, the general challenge of it is, you know, it kind of takes a lot of the fun out of directing because you're making your choices, you know, usually in horror movie language, the tools that you use to scare people are actually taken away from you when you're making found footage. You can't use score, you can't use edits, you can't use, like, you know, stingers and sound design, you know, and in theory, the camera should only be looking at what it's looking at if a character would have a legitimate, plausible, practical reason for aiming it that way. Obviously, you get a lot of leeway with those things past a certain point, but, you know, but it's tough. What it buys you, however, you know, is well, A, you know, I think the VHS of it all, just kind of going back to what Jennifer was saying, like, I'm just always interested by how the aesthetics of, like, Super 8 film, even though that kind of existed before, that was really popular kind of before my time, it has a nostalgic kind of warmth as an aesthetic, whereas the aesthetics of early video are very alien. They make people look very hideous. They like, you know, the contrast is so bad that, like, even the most beautiful person looks like washed out and pasty or strange on early video. You know, it's just like inherently, it has a different effect on us kind of emotionally. So you have that opportunity to use that kind of visual aesthetic, which obviously you can't if you're making a normal movie. And then beyond that, there is something kind of wonderful about, you know, being able to take people on enough of on the type of narrative ride that they can sort of pretend is real.
Yeah.
You know, turn off your brain and be like, what if, what, you know, like, and feel like I really am watching, you know, police raiding a building, or, you know, like a news broadcast that, like, you know, was lost, buried because, you know, it uncovered the truth about Ratma. You know, I actually really do enjoy that just as a viewer, when a found footage movie can kind of get me there and make me turn off my brain. And so, you know, that's the positive about it. The negative, I would like to actually talk about more, but I that was a pretty long answer anyway.
Does anybody else have anything else they'd like to add about found footage? I feel like we just got a lecture. I'm sorry.
I did a Blair Witch movie. Like, I have a lot to say about it.
I felt like I chose to do one that was single camera, which I think was probably a mistake. In the future, I would not do that. But yeah, it kind of meant that I had to do the thing which I always frankly felt like I was really bad at as a filmmaker, which is essentially a one-er, just like blocking a scene and doing it in a single take and figuring out a way to, like, you know, block and, like, create camera movement that still tells a story and also creates beats and creates scares. And that's really hard to do, but I enjoyed it. I don't know if it was successful, but I enjoyed it because it was a challenge, and it kind of felt like, yeah, like choreographing live theater or something at a certain point, and having to find very strategic cut points in there because we also had effects. And yeah, it's actually, in a way, I think it's harder than, you know, traditional filmmaking.
Yeah, and effects wise, like, for you, Ryan and Jennifer, like, how, like, so, like, the, you both have some really good effects in both of your segments. Like, how much of a challenge was it to shoot around all of that? Like, just given the nature of what found footage is.
Yeah. That was, like, the fun of it was, like Simon was saying, of like we want to make this feel like an incident that you're, like, watching play out in real time, but then you keep notching it up with like supernatural or otherworldly, or, like, you know, like things that you wouldn't see normally. So that was, to me, that was, like, the whole purpose of doing it was, like, okay, how can we make this feel like a documentary, you know, in the case of my segment, where they're capturing, you know, a creature on the loose, and we're actually witnessing that happen. And I think part of it too, the fun of, like, kind of cracking the story and the code was definitely, you know, like, thinking about, like, who's the camera person and why are they still there? Something else is going down. Like, you know, I think especially with found footage, it's like, that's almost the first
step to cracking the story is like, what's putting the camera there and building around that. And I just thought, these idiot macho militia dudes would definitely be walking into a barn where there's some kind of creature on the loose and like would have no problem doing it. That was fun to write.
Cool.
And I would say, this is the first found footage project that I've done, and I feel really particular about my cinematography. Like, I use a lot of close-ups. I use a lot of cross dissolves. I mean, in my previous work or my non-found footage, films. And so it was a challenge, to make something that felt like, in terms of the cinematography, still felt like it was coming from me. And, again, without giving too much away, at some point I knew that there needed to be a bludgeoning. And I thought about, what would be the most interesting way to do that in this format. And I won't say much more, but my segment, ends with a particular kind of bludgeoning, which in real life might not actually be cool. I think something else would break before the other thing breaks, but we take liberties.
It was a great choice.
Yeah, without spoiling, that is a very on point bludgeoning.
Top 10 bludgeoning of the year.
I'll make that list. And so how about just like last question, like dead media, do you all collect dead media, like VHS tapes?
Any VHS fans, watchers of VHS still?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Came up on it.
Yep.
I mean, I guess all media is kind of dead.
So, yeah, true.
I continue to buy physical media in technically modern formats, but it feels like I'm already celebrating, a forgotten thing for arbitrary reasons related to my own like hoarding instinct.
Are you very Blu-ray specific?
I probably have like about 1,000 Blu-rays.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I have like 3,000 records. I've been collecting, vinyl since I was a little kid. So I have a lot of records. I actually have like had to have record shelves made, and I have like two turntables in an apartment with as many bedrooms. that's what I would rather spend my money on, I guess. I mean, that's all success really affords you is the ability to ideally keep working, and then also to buy more of the crap that you kind of bought before. Oh, and I guess you don't have the constant terror of living in a society without a safety net whatsoever.
just 20 cc's of morose with every question.
Is that too? I guess I should always have that.
All right. Well, thank you all very much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Yeah, and navigating the tech issues too. That was
yeah,
very well done.
we're indie filmmakers. It's on the fly. We're ready to do it.
Right. Thank you all so much.
VHS 94 is available on Shudder right now. Let us know what you thought of this movie over on Twitter at NOFS Podcast and in the Nightmare on Film Street Discord at nofspodcast.com/discord. If you enjoyed this week's episode, let us hear about it. Leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It's the easiest way to support the show, and it really, truly does help grow the horde and get the podcast in front of more fiends like yourself. Nightmare on Film Street, of course, is a free podcast, and you can support the show for $0 by recommending it to a friend or talking about it on social media to anybody that you think would enjoy it. But thank you again for listening, and until next time, stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.